Welcome to Outside the Panels, a show where we deep dive into our favorite creators and also our favorite publishers. My name is Poet Air, and joining me as always is...
Chaz.
Today we also want to introduce you all to our hardworking editor and third member of the cast. Everybody, say a warm and welcome, comics hugged, hi to Jack.
Hey, how you guys doing? It's a pleasure to be on here with you today. I'm really excited for this project.
I'm doing well. So our first episode, we're going to do a deep dive into Southern Fried Witcher with Grit. I'm super excited to talk about the book. I know me and Chaz have been itching to talk about it for a while.
Like, yeah.
And it's good to talk about Jack, who's just read it, kind of get into the book a bit and really dive into the creative process of the creators and also just talk about how much we love it. Because one word sums up the book, or two words, it's fucking awesome.
Yeah, agreed. I thought you were going to say funny, yet brutal. Ah, that's three words. Damn it.
Yeah, I definitely enjoyed the comedy aspect. It definitely, like, it accompanied the intense action and violence really well.
Yeah, the way it blends kind of its art style with comedy and violence is great. The violence never hangs too long because, I mean, he'll just slaughter... what is it, 30 goblins, but then you're laughing the whole time, so don't really think about it. And just kind of the non-serious sense of the whole book, it really is. It really just makes perfect alchemy. Let's talk a little bit, So Grit is the Scout Comics release. It's the first book in our Scout portion of the miniseries, where our writer portion will be focused on Ram V. The first episode will be next week when we talk about Graffiti's Wall. So Grit is a comic written by Brian Wickman, illustrated by Kevin Castellanero, colored by Simon Gao, and lettered by Scout's, like, hardworking, almost letters everything in Scout and Image, Micah Myers. He impresses me almost as much as how much Aditya Bidikar letters, but Aditya Bidikar is crazy how many books he letters a year. I don't know if anyone will top him. He's definitely, I think, the hardest working letterer in comics. But let's just jam about it. So it's about this character named Barrow, who's basically like an older southern version of Geralt from Witcher. And the book starts off where he's hired by a villager to clear some trolls. And then it kind of just spins out from there. What were your first thoughts on it, guys?
This is the Scout title that I would for sure recommend to anybody who is curious about the label, because it's got, like we were saying earlier, it's got it all. It's brutal. It's really cool. Like, it just has a cool look and sheen to it. I think a lot of that comes from Kevin's art. And it's funny. There's even a little bit of, like, a emotional, I would say, core to it that's introduced in the second issue that I think anchors all of that action and comedy really well. It's a pretty radical just book overall. I feel like it's got some of the most polish that I've seen from Scout. And they pretty prolific as publishers. They're in there a lot. So, but yeah, I dug just about everything about this book.
Yeah, I would say that it's a fun, easy read, but it's a nice, like, one-shot adventure with a lot of really cool monsters. And, for there only being, like, three issues in this miniseries, there seems to be a decent amount of world building too. It had a lot of attitude. It was pretty sassy, the characters and their the dialogue between them.
It does a great job of making you feel like you know the characters and you know this world really well after just like five pages. By the time, I mean, maybe this is that opening panel of a goblin taking a piss and then he's murdered savagely. And then by the fifth panel, when you see the creatures in this book I really want to talk about, the goblins are so no-nonsense, and they kind of sound like a drunk British guy that's trying to mess with you. I love the, he must be Mighty Daff, like one of the better lines in it, where they're saying, don't you know it's dangerous around here? And then by the time he's surrounded by goblins, it's Barrow, one of Barrow's many one-line, awesome, badass lines. Don't you all know it's dangerous around here? And that, you just see Barrow do that. He'll take on 30 people at once with just his axe and his, like, machete blade and just basically is almost like a ninja master slayer, just will take on 30 people at once. And one of the things I love about the book that Kevin and Simon and Micah all do is kind of just with the lettering and the blood, you could see the art kind of come off the panels, off the page, which I really enjoy. There's always those black lines coming off. Like it really does that sense of grit where it feels dirty, bloody, and just a whole lot of fun. Scout did a fun thing a few months ago where they're saying cast Barrow. And to me, it feels like Barrow's Clint Eastwood, right?
Yeah, he's definitely got that Eastwood grimace, that sort of like that closed eye man with no name look.
It would be great to get Eastwood to play this now, but I feel like he's past that age where I don't know if he could run around and fight with an axe and sword.
No. But voice, if it was an animated and you had like the Eastwood voice underneath, that would be pretty incredible. Or you could always get his son. It looks just like young Clint Eastwood almost.
You could always Princess Leia him in there.
Yeah, there we go. All digital. Digital Eastwood.
Off topic, but that's a bad movie. I don't know.
Digital Eastwood? Yeah. I've never seen that one. But I want to.
Wait, is that a thing?
No, but I wish it was.
It's all just set. Like, they just build a forest and all the settings around his lawn in Gran Torino just so they can use that setting of him in Gran Torino. So
yeah.
Every time you see him, he's just turning around on his porch. But instead of his porch, you see forests and monsters behind him.
And instead of all the racist slurs, it's goblins and monsters instead. Hate witches.
Going back to grit, we were talking about the monsters and the more comedy aspects, and not trying to do any spoilers here, but I really enjoyed watching cultists summon a monster and then the bitter irony of that monster immediately killing him,
especially when he was like, it worked. Oh shit, it worked.
Like, oh yeah, shit, like, it worked. And then it just brutally burns him.
It just pops him. Yeah,
that was pretty sick. I really loved thinking of the comedy part, that blood monster design, super sick. Just super, super duper brutal. Like, he just looked cool as hell.
Groucho Archdemon, yeah. He looks so cool. He looks cool in his big form. And then in the end, when they're at Black
his,
Dog
like,
Bottom,
compressed form,
when he just rips out of that guy's body, and he's just like a blood warrior. So much.
But there's a scene when he's big where Barrow kicks him and it jiggles like Jell-O. And I was just like, it gave me a chuckle. And then I watched him just pulverize this blood demon. And I was like, oh yeah, he's here to kill. I forgot. But he had a little laugh along the way. Gotta love what you do.
The murderous Jell-O monster.
One of my favorite laughs are through that too, when he's fighting him and goes, here, hold this. And then just sticks the machete through his hand and runs up his leg with the axe. Just completely annihilates him and makes him fall like a glob of Jell-O. By the way, Jack, we're going to totally spoil the book. By the way, listeners, there's going to be spoilers for Grit.
Yeah.
If you really want to talk about everything in
the book.
We're going to
broad strokes, for the most part, the story, and then give you little specifics that we enjoyed. Not beat for beat, page for page, but definitely you're going to get a good chunk, a good grip. Actually, with this one, there's a lot to show rather than tell, I would say, because the lettering is incredible and all of it is really good, but the majority of it for the first one at least is pretty silent for the most part. I mean, apart from thwacks and smash and chops or whatever. Like, there's not a lot of talking. He's a lot more action, so.
That's very, I feel like the most talking is in the beginning with the villager and then with the goblin, and the rest is just kind of Barrow's one-liner as well. He just kind of assaults through everything on page.
Yeah, so I'll let Chaz do this one, but I just wanted to bring up the birds.
Yeah, so the second issue introduces a character named Ari, who has some really great titles that I'll let Michael throw out there, or Poet Air throw out there.
I'll do it real quick. Ari is a leaf speaker, shrub shepherd, and vegetation conservationist. And she's kind of our magic wizard witch character in the series that comes in part two. And as Chaz will tell you, she's the one that's really the heart of the story, and also the one that her best friends are birds.
And like Jack was saying, there's a scene where she runs into Barrow, and Barrow wants to know how she knows, basically, how she got over there. And she says, a little bird told me. And then the next panel is a scene where she's literally talking to a little bird that said, some asshole killed all these dudes. It's like,
which is
so good. And then she does talk to other birds and other creatures and stuff throughout the book. But that alone really made it stand out, made her stand out in my mind as like, oh, this is pretty fun powers. This is pretty badass.
Yeah, when she gets to the like slaughter of the cult originally and those crows are just eating those bodies and she's just like, ah, oh, you're so gross. Just so many good lines. The little birds, I think, are the like cutest, the little like robins.
Yeah, that just want like peace in their forest again almost. They don't want to see a bunch of dead goblins and bloody men. Yeah, so it's...
You were just chilling in the forest. All of a sudden, some guy came in and started slaughtering everyone.
Just a big old axe. Or I guess regular-sized axe, but... Yeah.
He's got, like, that machete, too. Yeah. Was he using that in the first issue?
Yeah, I think he pulls it out
all
clutch.
Yeah, he has both in the first
issue.
Like,
it looks like...
Yeah, oh, he was, like, dual-wielding.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Another great line is when he loses his axe in the first battle, and then when he's fighting the blood monster, he rolls around and says, am I glad to see you? And grabs his axe back up.
Got like a personal
the
relationship with his axe.
Definitely. I feel like those two are like his best friends, the axe and machete. I got to say about Kevin's art too, is the expressions he does in it are super good. Just for everything, the creatures and Barrow. We're talking about how the story shows you more than tells. It shows so much through everyone's expressions, which kind of make the book just so much more of an enjoyable read because it's not, I mean, it's such a quick read too. I reread it now many times. It probably takes like a half an hour to read the whole thing. And that's, I enjoy it for that. It's quick, but you get so much substance from it.
I definitely think he kind of got himself into a Witcher situation when he was all grumpy that he was brought in to deal with some goblins and there like weren't that many goblins, but then he ended up like in way over his head, or like not way over his head, but dealing with a way bigger problem than goblins.
Yeah, it was really that like Geralt fuck moment of like what am I into here.
They paid me for goblins and now there's a fucking demon.
Yeah. I also liked how he tells Ari how he dispatched the blood demon and he's like, yeah, I killed it. I chopped it up. And like this is the immediate like, why would you do that? It's a blood demon. Yeah. It's just fun.
And he's like, I'm gonna go chop it up again.
Yeah.
He's like, no.
Which I thought led to a pretty cool solution to how you fight a blood demon. That third issue using that like leech magic or whatever was pretty inspired.
Yeah, the leech magic is great. I also like how Geralt's more bothered by mud in the swamp than monsters. Like the one time he's like, it ain't worth the money is when he's just falling and slipping in mud. But it doesn't really bother him when he's just chopping through people.
Now I'm picturing Clint Eastwood having to like slog through mud to go fight a witch and talking about how much he hates it because of how you've cast Eastwood as Barrow. And I gotta say, I would love to watch Eastwood slip up in some mud and just get covered and talk about how much he hates it there and how terrible it is.
It'd be great, especially with his voice just, oh, it's mud. I like how with the Bogmother scene too, he gets so much exposition for Barrow. Quick exposition, because you hear in the first issue that something happened to his mom, and then you get to see that his dad was sick, and we don't get all of the story, but his mother basically did some witchcraft, which involved somehow getting his father, who just passed away, possessed by a demon, and it seems to be the kind of thing that haunts Barrow, which makes him kind of the Ashen Bastard, as people call him.
Yeah, he's been used, it even says in that first issue that he's been used as a scapegoat his whole life. People just blame him for what's wrong, regardless of his involvement in it. So it's interesting that they still turn to him to solve these problems when, in a way, he feels like the root cause of them for people.
Yeah, that it seems like they blame him for bringing a lot of the mess there. But I feel like they're just too scared to deal with themselves, like the bartender that's judging the villager that hired him. But then when he had a revenant in his basement, he went to Barrow.
Yeah, it was kind of a nice little like, well, what did you do? Well, yeah, I hired him too. Like, well, we'll talk trash, but we'll definitely give him props, I guess, where props are due.
Yeah, and Ari makes such a good character with him in the pair because she's more talkative and definitely will just talk about all the issues that he has, like the mistakes he makes by killing the monster and just how he tries to act like he doesn't need her, but Ari has a way better handle on the situation than he does. And she's definitely got, like you were calling her, the emotional center of the story. She definitely brings the story more to all of us because she's almost like the audience as well, where you get to know Barrow a little bit more. And I like seeing her power in the third issue especially. We kind of just see her max out, where we see how powerful she is, which I hope in future installments of Grit we get to see more of that.
Yeah, it feels like there's still a lot on the table for them to play around with. And even if the next volume of Grit, which I know we're going to get into a little bit here later, even with that next volume of Grit, they could still explore Ari, they could still go back to Barrow. They can even take it anywhere. Like, this could be a real episodic but just big universe that they play around in. So I like when a world feels... They didn't spend any time telling us about this world, but I already want to see other stories within it.
That's the same way I feel. Like, I can't wait to meet more characters in this world. Like, we only know, like, a few base characters now, and I can't wait to meet other people that hunt monsters, other monsters, and just kind of see more of the general outlay of the world. Like, right now, I only really know what Black Dog Bottom looks like in the woods, which I just kind of see them expand this. And I was going to say, I thought me and Chaz, Jack, created the term Southern Fried Witcher, which I found out that's not true. That somehow Brian Wickman inceptioned me, because when I was reading his page yesterday, his first thing on his Twitter bio is, I'm the creator of Southern Fried, swords and fighting fantasy Grit. And I'm just like, well, there's no way he could have heard it from us, because the other stuff that we did it on hasn't really been released when we were talking about it. So I'm like, I guess Brian Wickman inceptioned me, like Leonardo DiCaprio.
You must have scrolled right by it and just let it sink into your brain. So I wanted to say that the one issue I had with it was that it felt like it ended kind of abruptly. Like it sort of wrapped itself up, but
yeah,
I felt like it would keep going a little bit and resolve a little more smoothly. But hopefully that means that the second volume will kind of pick up from where it left off. But you guys were speculating that it might be like a totally different story inside the same universe. Do you want to talk about that?
Yeah, it's just, okay, so the second volume comes out in February. It's called Grit, the Ballad of the Bloom Knight. We don't have much to go off of, so everything here is just speculation. But the only thing we have for it is art, and on the main cover is a knight's helmet, and he's got flowers coming out of his base. I do know that there's another artist coming onto it named Kirks, but it has the same colorist and same letterer, and of course, same writer, Brian Wickman. And I was mostly just speculating because I feel like Kevin really helped create Barrow as well, that Barrow might not be the star of the new volume, just because I feel like that there's so much of Barrow. That's just my view as a reader, though. There's so much of Barrow that is Kevin Castellanero that I think it'd be kind of strange seeing another artist do Barrow, but I'd still be down for it. Maybe it'll have to do with Ari, as Chaz was saying. It's all just kind of speculation right now. Chaz, what do you think? I'm going to double check some stuff while we continue to talk about it.
I'm really hoping that it's about Ari, because I agree with you, Jack, that the end of this definitely came pretty abruptly. They kind of had that Deus Ex moment of Ari just like going full Saiyan almost, right? Like, there was just that huge thing. Everything's over. They beat the monster. Way to go. We're off on our own adventures now. So I would love for them to actually explore what that was that came out of her, because that didn't seem connected to any of her previously sort of used nature powers. You know what I mean? It was much more fire or sun oriented, I guess, if you wanted to reach for nature. So if they explored her in this upcoming second series, that would be a pretty cool way to sort of explain what happened at the end of this first one. Why maybe that was a bad thing. Maybe she unlocked something she wasn't supposed to, right? Some sort of deal with the devil, who knows, in order to get these powers.
Yeah, I think that the fact that she knows how to deal with the blood demon and use the blood, it kind of seems like, you know, it's probably like part of her good guy powers with it being that kind of sun.
I would hope so, yeah. Sun
magic, but... It would be nice if it was like there was like kind of a darker backstory that they touch into.
I have an update, hot from the presses. So Ballad of the Bloom Knight is a one shot that has three different stories. It's oversized and it stars the jolliest of revenants, Sir Andre Lapointe. So it looks like it's not going to be either of the characters we know. And this is just something to fill the void until we continue with Barrow. And a revenant is like a dead person who's come back to life. So it looks like it's a dead knight who's somehow become full of flowers. And that's...
Yeah, I was going to say, you got to cover up that dead guy smell. That's probably where all those flowers come in. Or maybe like somebody threw seeds on him one time. And like, get out of here, you dead guy. And they just took root in his body.
Yeah, I mean, I hear a dead guy is great fertilizer.
Yeah, that's why there's so many produce markets by cemeteries.
There's actually an intro preview that's on Multiversity Comics that I'm actually looking at right now, which has both Barrow and the Knight in it. So it does look like Barrow will be in it also. And Barrow looks a little bit different with this artist, but he still looks great. So it looks like Barrow will be involved as well, because the preview, it's got both Barrow and the Knight.
Maybe it'll almost be like a Green Knight situation. Barrow's got to go do the contest, this Ballad of the Bloom Knight. Or something. I don't know. That could be cool.
It looks to me like it'd almost be his, why am I going to freeze right now? I sound like I don't know literature. The guy that chases windmills, to me it looks like the story panels I just saw in the preview.
Oh, little Don Quixote?
It looks like it's Don Quixote. Like, Barrow's the sidekick, and then the knight's like Don Quixote, because it literally has him walk up to a destroyed windmill. And
man, Barrow as Sancho Panza is like... That's gonna give me a good solid chuckle, because when he's tilting at those windmills, I know Barrow's not gonna be like, yeah, you got it, boss. He's gonna be like, that's a fucking windmill.
Yeah, that's what the little preview ends with, is the Bloom Knight leading him to like a windmill. So one, we just found out just from me quickly searching, is that Barrow will be in it, which is awesome. We get more Barrow. I feel like maybe it'll be set before the original series, but I'm totally invested in just being back in this world, period.
Same. Yeah, anything that they can give us on this gritty world, the nitty-gritty on it, I'm in.
I agree totally with what you guys were saying, too. I originally, when I did get the titles and read it, I didn't know it was only three issues, and I only found out, you know, after researching, because it does end so abrupt. I feel, especially with Jack, just him just reading it, you probably have the same thoughts of like, whoa, that's it?
Yeah, definitely. I did really like the ending panel, which I'm not going to talk about on here. I'm going to let the readers enjoy that for themselves.
Yeah, I read another book this week, which kind of reminded me of it, but it was less abrupt, but just had, I love it when books end with just something you have to like gel with and think about, even in Grits where it's more comedic.
Yeah, it definitely, I felt like it ended on a good solid chuckle for me, which was good. Like, after the wildness of the adventure, it was good to close it out with like a classic comedy bit almost.
Definitely left off on a good note there.
Yeah.
And you know, they did it well, because like we're saying, it was so abrupt and we wanted more of it, which always is just talking about how well the storytellers did. Because you're just like, oh, and then that's how I kind of felt, like, I want to be here more.
They cut it just a tiny bit short so that we'd be craving more.
Yeah, the equivalent of turning the lights on at the club. Like, all right, you gotta go, get out of here. And it's like, no, I'm staying. I'm dancing. Let me read it.
You'll see that a lot, because for Jack, his family's in the comic business, but he's fairly getting back into comics with us, kind of getting him to read these titles. the way we're going to do this show is he'll definitely get a pick too. So after this pick of Scout and Ramby that I picked, Chaz will get his picks for a publisher and artist, and then we'll get Jack to make his pick, which I'm excited for because, Jack, you know a lot of people in the indie comic community, and I'm definitely down to get into some really indie people like Jim Moffood, who's awesome, and I didn't even know you knew him until, like, last week.
Yeah, I've actually known him since I was, like, a kid. It's been a little while since I've talked to him. It would be good to get back in touch.
And that's awesome. It's cool that your dad and sister both ran comic shops and done that stuff forever. Where, you know, we should definitely have your sister and Chaz talk one day about running a comic book shop. I would love to hear their stories of Diamond and Lost Foxes.
Yeah, I've always, like, you know, done little bits of stuff for them, like working with them. So, you know, being around comics my whole life and, like, working with them, it was always, like, a little bit hard for me to want to read them all the time.
Oh, definitely.
But I've definitely enjoyed it, though. I've always, you know,
for me,
had a good time reading comics.
Yeah, my love is that we get, with both indie and even the big two, we get our real IP, like really new intellectual property, which I've always just loved fiction, whether it's film, comics, books. But I feel like in film, it's kind of become repetitive the last decade, where a lot of the times, unless you're someone like Nolan or Tarantino, it's just people retelling the same story over and over again, which still happens even in comics. But I feel like comics is a lot of artists and writers to express what they want to put out on the page. And it'll always take me places where I'm surprised. I mean, so many comics I've read in just the last 5 years have surprised me. Characters kill their darlings, I'm always surprised, which we'll see a lot in comics where I feel like movies are more safe. And yeah, it's just, they're my favorite part of fiction. As a person who wants to be a writer, I get so much inspiration from reading. And kind of, I like being able now to, me and Chaz get to bring you back in. And Jack, I know that whatever you guys' choices will be, you'll be excited. My first picks, I really want to talk about the White Noise crew, which I brought up earlier, which is Ram V, Dan Waters, Ryan O'Sullivan, and Alex Paknadel. They're all three of them are favorite writers, period, right now. Ryan, I haven't read as much of his stuff, but he's also awesome. But just, Jack, you don't know, they're just four British guys. And they made a group together. They're all around the same age. I think Alex and Ram are they're older than Ryan and Dan. But it's just like four British dudes that got together. And they're like best friends in real life. And they released their titles officially as White Noise through Vault. But kind of all their books are White Noise. So this would be our first White Noise member that we're covering. And their thing on Twitter is what is White Noise?
And they publish through Scout Publishing.
They do not. Correct? That's actually not. The reason I picked Scout is because we want to be able to focus on artists and also publishers. Scout's just a really hands-on publisher, and so is Ram V. Out of like my experience working on shows and being involved with comics at all in the comics community, Scout Comics and Charlie Stickney and Ryan Ellsworth, a lot of people that are involved heavily with Scout have been really nice, and they always reach out. And they are just so humble and easy to talk to. And the other person that's been that way with me is Ram V. I've read his stuff for a while. And for like the last year and a half or 2 years, he's openly talked to me and like Johnny, a few other people he knows love his work, which I haven't seen a lot of creators do, which Ram has kind of reached out and been like, oh, I like that episode. It's awesome you think that way of my books, which is me. It blows me away because he's like an inspiration to me. He's probably my favorite writer right now. And just how hands-on he is with fans, and so is Scout. So that's my connection to why I picked them, is for these creators don't need to be hands-on. They don't need to reach out to their fans. And both Scout and Ram V have always really reached out and been really hands-on and wanting to be in contact with their fans, which is something special. And when we get to the end of this movie series, Blue and Green, I mean, Ram gave that to me before he sent it out for review copies, which is I'll always remember and appreciate. And I mean, he told me I couldn't review it till October 20th, but he sent it to me about a month before the release date, which he didn't have to. And that's kind of what he always appreciated. And Scout also has sent me their titles months before they come out, just so I could kind of read it and then get it out there. And I really, it's awesome to do that because I'll always share their work now. And it's cool to see Chaz kind of bring their product more into the comic book shop, both Ram V and Scout, kind of as they grow. How do you feel about that, Chaz?
I'm loving it. Anything that gets new ideas into people's hands, especially when they're good, solid series. And it's good that we started with Scout 2 because they have a lot of pretty cool upcoming releases, and they've recently changed their model to allow LCSs to actually order a bit more accurately. So instead of taking that guess on how many people are going to come back from issue number one to issue number two, they're expanding the release between issue number one and issue number two for an additional month so that you can really gauge orders, which as a manager of an LCS is super nice because sometimes it's almost impossible to know who's, you know what I mean? You could sell 25 number ones and 2 number twos. It's that wild of a swing sometimes with especially small press like this. But they got a lot of cool stuff coming up also. So it's kind of nice that it's getting back into stores and getting into all sorts of other stuff. So new hands.
So, I just wanted to say it's really great to support independent artists and writers. And that's something I look forward to doing with this podcast. But also, you know that their independent work, they have a lot more freedom and liberties and can be are probably more passionate about than, like, say, if they write for, like, the big two or whatnot. So, yeah, I think it's just really good to be able to support independent artists.
I agree, because the big two, they don't really need to sell their work. It's already sold, whereas all the independent work needs to be read. And it needs to be, you know, people need to hear how awesome it is to really even get them to try and read it, which it's always good to get word out there, you know, and get more people on it. And on Chaz's note, definitely Scout is super LCS friendly. I get a sub box and still the way they play it close to the vest is Charlie is always like, you should put it on your pull list and get the sub box because I can't guarantee that title is going to be in the sub box. Which is nice, which means even though they have an awesome subscription deal you can get per month, which also, since we're talking about Scout, for $39.99, you get 12 titles a month, and you get it every month, and you get really exclusive variants. Like my Grit number 3 is a RE variant that's only in Subbox, so it'll definitely be worth money. And they make it kind of, you know, worth it to be a Scout fan, but also they can change it up at any moment. So you also got to support your LCS, which gets them more sales and also helps that their sub box isn't cutting into the local comic shops business, which is good.
Oh, I was kind of going off topic, but
go off topic. We're outside here.
We've talked so much about Clint Eastwood. I felt obligated to put the Clint Eastwood meme in our Discord chat. So just this whole time, he's been like tipping the brim of his hat repeatedly.
Every time I catch it, too, a little bit of my hand goes up, and I like tip my my imaginary hat right back at it for some reason.
Oh, totally. That also made me want to bring up the fact that we briefly discussed Discord as a way to connect with fans, and at some point in the hopefully near future, we were talking about making a Discord server for connecting with our fans.
Yeah, definitely want that. Yeah. And I mean, we already know a lot of people in the comics community on Twitter, and it'll be a good place for them to kind of communicate with us besides just Twitter. And I think we could have a lot of fun with that. I feel like the fans that do like the show should pick their own nickname, though. I feel like Outsiders would be an awesome name, but also it'd be good for them to kind of pick what they want to go by. That's always a good thing. And then we could name the chat that.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Now I see him tipping his hat.
Oh, now I see him making like a really grumpy kind of disgusted face. He's like disgusted with me for tipping the non.
No, I picked the one that looked the most Barrow-ish to me.
It is that Gran Torino, definitely.
That's him going through the mud.
Him in the mud. Yeah.
Oh, there we go. Now he just found his axe.
Definitely. He's ready to fuck up some goblins.
Ready to slice and dice a blood demon.
Hugh Jackman would make a good Barrow too, because he's always kind of reminded me of a young looking Clint Eastwood, where I feel like he would be good as that as well.
Yeah, that'd be a good look.
Definitely.
We're all super excited here. Can't wait to get all of our flow together, and it'll be good to just kind of jam about these creators. I'm super excited to then start Ramp V next week. And for you both to read Graffiti's Wall, which you haven't read it yet, either of you. So I'm super excited for both of you to kind of read his first work. I'm definitely a huge fan of the book. And then our next Scout title will be White Ash, which is a mix up on the fantasy genre, which also, I know Chaz has read it, but Jack will be newly reading it. And that's a title created by Charlie Stickney. And it's kind of like mixing YA with fantasy, but also with kind of a darker edge. And also kind of just the Pennsylvania mining community, which it's another really fun book.
I was going to say it's like a rural Romeo and Juliet, but with fantasy characters.
It is totally. Yeah, I've even heard Charlie compare it to Romeo and Juliet, which is totally true as well.
But yeah, no, it's going to be a lot of fun diving into some of these ones further. What other Scout books are you looking forward to in that box?
Next month is what I'm really looking forward to, because next month you get Frank at Home on the Farm one, Recount one, Children of the Grave one, and a lot more of the Black Caravan books. The Verhapnuts also next month. This month I'm excited for my variant Phantom Starkiller. Phantom Starkiller is a new book we were talking about, you know, last week on the show. And also, I mean, I'm most excited for Frank at Home on the Farm, which is a book about a guy who returns home from the war to find his parents missing at his farm. I'm trying not to reveal too much of this story. And it's just a total, like, home on the range mixed with The Shining. It's really good. I've read the first three issues of it. It's a four-issue miniseries, but I got to read that quite some time ago. But I've never read the fourth issue, so I don't really know how it ends. So I'm excited to see it end, because I've been waiting for a long time to kind of see the resolution of it. But it has some of the most striking animal images I've ever read in comics. It does kind of have that dark humor as well. The creator, Jordan Roberts, is awesome. He's a really fun person online. And it's really, if you like Shining-esque horror.
Yeah, I'm excited for that one too. That one sounds pretty rad.
Yeah, I think it is, yeah.
The one that I'm most excited for is actually coming out in December, but it's Sam and his Talking Gun. The solicit just basically said it's about a man named Sam in a room full of broken and bloodied bodies, and the only thing on his mind is his pal Colt, and Colt is his gun that talks to him.
That gives me a really Roger Rabbit
kind of vibe. Yeah, I was thinking like that, but hopefully like serious noir. less racially caricatured bullets, maybe.
I'm also super excited for the Mage one, yeah. The Shepherd, which is coming out in January, I believe. There's a lot of stuff coming out. Children of the Grave, we got a sneak peek at, and I'm super pumped to see where that series goes. As a first issue, it totally blew me away in building a world, and then having a last scene which really leaves it hanging in so many ways, where I just don't know what's going to come next. It reminds me of like a demented version of The Promised Neverland, which is one of my favorite manga. So that's something I'm really excited about.
Pretty demented too. So like that's the double dement right there.
Yeah. Imagine a more fucked up Promised Neverland. If you've read that, you can kind of have an idea of where that's going. And the Recount is definitely something for this time with the election and stuff. I'm excited for all their new stuff coming out. They have such an exciting 2021 planned.
Put Scout on y'all's release radars now so that you could be in on the ground floor of some books that we're going to talk about in the near-ish future, 2021 and beyond.
Yep, and we put our episode list up on Twitter, so you can definitely see what we're talking about next. Also, just to get one more thing in about Scout, they recently updated their cover and paper stock, and it's amazing. It's got that hardcover kind of feel, and the paper is that it's glossy, but not too glossy. And for me, that's like my favorite kind of paper, where it's not too glossy. It feels thick, not thin. I know that's just kind of me being an OCD crazy comic book fan, but the paper stock is, it's real nice.
Yeah, it makes a difference, for real.
Oh, I definitely agree with that, 100%.
Yeah, there's some releases that come out from some publishers. I won't say who, but it feels like if you accidentally like put your hand back, you'd rip the whole thing in two, which just never feels good when you're holding a comic. That might be worth something that literally if you touch it too hard, it might rip.
If you look at it funny, it gets a big old dent.
Yeah. But anyhow, this is what we want to say kind of about Grit and Scout. I think we've had a pretty good first episode. Anything else you guys want to say?
Y'all got to get Grit. 1 through 3 are available now, both on the Scout store, and they're doing new printing. So if you stop by your LCS, you could probably order in the first 3 issues.
Are we going to be going into Blue and Green?
No, next we'll be doing Graffiti's Wall, the first book in Ram V's bibliography. Blue and Green's going to be the end of this miniseries. It's going to be like our big masterpiece that we talk about at the very end, just because Ram V just released it just a couple weeks ago, actually.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I really, really enjoyed that one.
Yeah, me too. It's definitely, I mean, I've tried not to talk about it too much earlier, but it's definitely my favorite book of the year, and it's nice that we're building up towards it. And even if we haven't talked about it yet, buy Blue and Green. You will not be disappointed.
You got plenty of time now to read it before we talk about it and release the episode about it.
I'm definitely going to do a reread before we do that episode.
You got to do it with Jazz. Same with people that are going to read it. I did this the second read. Look up on your Spotify or your Apple Music for the jazz musicians they bring up, which Blue and Green is a jazz horror story. And it really adds to the story you're reading.
Oh, I already did that on my my first read.
Smart.
It's great. I highly recommend
it. I wish
it.
I had. Yeah, I'm going to do that on my reread for sure.
Well, all right, everyone, thank you for listening. This is Poetair. You guys have a great night. Be good to each other. You know, show a lot of love out there in these strange times. And as Chaz always says,
wash your hands.
Please wash your hands. Thank you for listening.
If you're listening to this on Spotify or iTunes, please remember to rate our show. If you're listening on SoundCloud or YouTube, please let us know what you think in the comments, and remember to hit that subscribe button. Thank you for listening to our show. You can find us on Twitter as Poetair33, Chaz_Simmons, and Synesthetics with an X, or Synesthetic on Facebook and Instagram. Chaz and Michael are also on a wonderful podcast called Nerds from the Underground, available on Spotify and iTunes. That's all for now, kids. See you next week.